step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of We Saw the Devil. Today is going to be parts 2 and 3 of Melanie Gibbs' interview with Nate Eaton of East Idaho News. And man, they're doozies.
What were your initial thoughts after watching the second part and the third part?
So I feel like part 2, the veneer started to come off of Melanie a little bit. And with part 3, I feel like her bus broke down and the wheels popped off. So I have a lot to say and I can't wait to get into it. But yeah, I have a lot to talk about with this. What about you?
Pretty much the same. As I was watching it, I was getting progressively more angry. And I have notes on what parts made me very upset.
Same.
It was a little bit of not a hard watch, but more just, I don't know. I know she's a victim in this as well. You know, like they lied and all of that and kind of threw her under the bus. Mm-hmm. I get it. I don't want to shame her for that. And I'm very happy that she came forward. But I feel like she dropped the ball a couple times.
I agree. And I think that there are several different reasons for that, which you can't wait to discuss. But there was one particular part in the third piece, the third segment, where I wanted to slam down my headphones.
Mm-hmm. So we will get to that, though. So before we get into our thoughts on both interviews, we do want to thank our newest patrons, too. We had a few this month.
We did. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much, Darla, Susan, Ashley M., Lauren, Cheryl, Ashley B., and Brittany.
Yes, thank you so much for financially backing the show. We really appreciate you guys. We have so much that we want to do with the show, and your financial backing is going to help get us there.
Yeah, and if you are thinking of joining our Patreon, it's patreon.com/wesawthedevil. We have a bunch of different tiers available, and we have everything from private shows to postcards and some merch.
We do. And from the postcards, what we do, and this is, I think, from what I've heard and the feedback we've gotten, this is everyone's favorite part. For each month, we have like a case of the month, right? Sometimes it's Patreon only, sometimes it's not. But for our patrons, we send them a postcard from the state that the case takes place in, and with a little bit of a teaser and obviously a handwritten thank you. And so it's a lot of fun when they try to guess it.
Yeah. And so normally they'll get a postcard from one of the cases that we are currently talking about, whether it be, like she said, one that's out for everyone or a private.
Yes, it's very true. If you feel so inclined, feel free to check out our Patreon and see if there is something that you would like.
Yeah. And you know what? I do have a couple other thank yous, too. So a couple of people reached out to us over the last couple of days and helped us with a couple of the questions that we had on the last episode. Mm-hmm. So special thank you to those that were talking about the adversary being mm-hmm. Satan. So I know we had some comments on YouTube, one from Love to Love Em. Oh, my gosh. Let me say that again. One from Love to Love Em. And then we got an email as well.
We did. So a big thank you to Cindy. So Cindy immediately wrote in. She was listening to our episode the day that it dropped. And she says, the adversary, that's another name for the devil. So I really, really appreciate that. I responded to her and said, that's interesting. You know, I'd never heard of it referred that way. And she said, I don't think it's specific to the LDS church. I grew up a Seventh-day Adventist, and this is where I heard it. It's not something that you hear a lot, but I have heard him referred to by that name. Also, as Amanda said, we got a lot of comments on YouTube regarding the same thing. So thank you so very much. And Cindy even provided the Bible quote on it. It's from Peter, and it says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So again, thank you so much for that little knowledge drop. This is my favorite part of doing this show.
Right. Yeah. I love learning from everyone. So thank you. Quick apology. If you guys hear any fans or anything, we have heat advisories and it is very hot today. So I'll admit it. It's middle of the day.
I have to say that I'm dying and melting and it's only like 87 degrees.
It's 109 here. So
yeah, but I'm still hot. Apologies in advance for any noise.
All right. You ready for these interviews?
I'm ready.
Oh, man. So remember, these were filmed on the same day with Nate Eaton and Melanie Gibb, but he did put them into three different sections. So we will be reviewing part two and three. If you want to hear our thoughts on part one, go back one episode. Mm-hmm. So this one starts with Melanie knew about Lori going to Rexburg. She actually had originally thought Chad was coming to Arizona, but obviously that didn't work out. So I'm very, very thankful that Mr. Potato Head did not move to Arizona because I can't even imagine all of it happening here. Although, yeah, I mean, Yellowstone versus desert and everything, too. Yeah. So I don't know. We have a lot of open space, too. But Lori was told that she needed to be in Rexburg by a certain time. And she also needed her own answer before she moved, and apparently she got it. Now, Melanie didn't see much of Lori after Charles died. Lori mentioned to Melanie that she didn't want to go through another divorce. So that's, I guess, another reason why she didn't want a divorce with him, because she had so many. Yeah, so that would have been divorce number four for her. So in her mind, for some reason, death is better than divorce.
God.
Or, I mean, an insurance talk, right. I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They also thought Tammy was going to pass away before she got to Rexburg. So before Lori moved to Rexburg. They thought that she would be dying in a car accident.
Just like Charles.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Charles was some sort of accident.
It was a car accident on his way back from Texas.
Got it. Wasn't he flying? So they thought that Tammy was going to die in a car accident. Mm-hmm. Now, even though she didn't die, Lori still decided she had to be in Rexburg by a certain date. I wonder what date was so significant or why.
Yeah, I wonder why. That's interesting. I'd never heard that before either.
Mm-hmm. And also, she didn't die in this car accident, right? And everyone around Chad thought that she was going to die, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't he say at one point or another, someone said that other people knew about this? Was anyone kind enough to tell Tammy, hey, people think you're going to die soon?
No. From everything, from what was said in part two and part three, Tammy had very little interaction with anybody else from Chad's group. I think he kept Tammy completely separate from all of it.
Right. So. It's just so sad.
Another piece that I would be really interested in knowing is what was the date, like the time, rough time frame that Tammy was supposed to die in a car accident versus when a man showed up at their home and, you know, shot at her with a paintball gun.
Right. Exactly. So that's just really scary. And I feel so horrible for poor Tammy. Tammy just all around seemed like one of the sweetest people, and they were married for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, she moved with him to Rexburg. They had a bunch of kids. Like, it's just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It's so sad. From there, Melanie talks about her visit to Lori, right? Which was a weekend in Rexburg that she visited from a Thursday through a Monday morning.
And my understanding, too, of this, correct me if I am wrong, but this is right around the time that JJ went missing.
That is our guess. And I'll talk about that too as we get mm-hmm. there. But she gave us a couple context clues
yep,
there.
Yeah, she did.
So Lori and Chad like to walk around the track, and Melanie got to join them on one of these creepy, weird dates.
Yep. So Melanie said that they showed affection towards one another and held hands.
Mm-hmm. And then when she was concerned about, like, isn't someone going to see you? Remember, his wife didn't die.
Because they were at BYU.
Yeah, there's a lot of people around that campus, too. When we went and we visited Idaho, we kind of hung out in that little area by BYU. And there's a lot of people.
There's a lot of foot traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So Melanie says that she asked, hey, isn't someone going to, you know, see you guys? Isn't someone going to put two and two together that that's not your wife?
All right. So, yeah, she had mentioned that they probably wouldn't know what Tammy looked like, that she didn't really go many places, or she said something along those lines. And my thought was, she attended church. You know, when we had interviewed some people in Rexburg, they even said she went to the Relief Society, like the meetings for it. So I don't know how they wouldn't know what she looked like. That's weird to me.
Well, Tammy had nothing to do with any of it. So, I mean, but towns are so small, and that, you know, if Tammy and Chad went to church together, someone somewhere would have seen him and Lori. Statistically, it was probable.
One thing that I learned when I did visit Rexburg, when we did one of our interviews, is some of the neighbors around the area, not necessarily near BYU, but around Chad, or around their church, had said that Tammy was just at a Relief Society activity mm-hmm. shortly before she died. So I feel like someone could have recognized that was not Tammy.
Yeah.
This blonde woman walking around with another blonde woman right. and Chad on this track.
And Melanie, from my understanding too, people knew who Melanie was because Melanie had frequently gone up for preparing a people and eval events, right? Mm-hmm. So Melanie wasn't exactly non-recognizable herself.
Right. So that's very strange to me. I think it's just they didn't care. You know, they didn't care who knew. And we'll find out shortly why for that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So Melanie also said that Chad seemed reserved and didn't always come across as confident.
I wonder why.
Well, I feel like he was just trying to play her. Like, he was trying to come across as non-threatening so that she wouldn't, like, you know, talk to Lori, her friend, and go, hey, he's kind of sketch. I feel like he was just playing it.
I actually disagree with you on this. I believe that that is Chad's entire spiel, right? I truly believe that as a person, he is non-threatening. He's like, you know, because most cult leaders aren't threatening. They come across as very quiet, reserved, you know, and that's how, I mean, predators in general, they come across as kind, sweet, non-threatening, and that's how they groom people. And as we will discuss here shortly, he definitely groomed Melanie as well.
I mean, yeah, I see it that way, too. It's just more, I don't think he wasn't confident, though. And maybe he was reserved, but because he was so calculated. Mm-hmm. And even, like I mentioned last time, I read one of those books, and the way that he sums people up or, like, notices every little weird detail is kind of creepy. So I guess I could see the reserved part, but I don't know. The confidence, I feel like he was super confident, and he is threatening, and he knows it.
Really? I actually disagree on that one. That's interesting.
I don't know.
We'll continue. I mean, I think part three is where we can really get to the nitty gritty on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just feel like he's smarter than he.
I do. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Like, yeah, because he looks just like this, like, bumbling idiot, right? And then he's very calculated. And in that sense, I feel like that's threatening and scary.
Okay. See, I feel like he's cold, he's menacing and calculating, but I feel like he is smart enough to come off as reserved and non-threatening and kind.
Right. That's why I say he's kind of playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So during this visit, Tylee was not seen. Now, she asked Lori, and Lori said, oh, she's at BYU. And the weird thing is, she said she visited on a weekend. Let's say she did, you know, attend BYU. Why wouldn't she come home for the weekend? If she had, maybe she had a dorm, but also that doesn't make sense to have a dorm when your parent lives very, very close.
And furthermore, correct me if I'm wrong, please. Okay, I'm thinking finances here, right? Because it's very pricey to live on campus, typically, even though that can be lumped in with financial, you know, aid packages and whatnot. But I just have mm-hmm. a hard time believing that BYU is so close. I have a hard time believing that Tylee would actually live on campus, just say theoretically, if she had gone to BYU.
Why? You know, why wouldn't she be there? And then also, it's a weekend. So I feel like, it. Let's say she did, for some reason, live on campus.
Laundry.
Which makes no sense.
Or visits. JJ.
Exactly. Yeah. She would have went, and for the bond that they talk about, especially with JJ, she would have come to visit.
Yep.
And then Melanie said, you know, Tylee had her GED, so it was plausible that she'd be attending there, but she also didn't feel like it was the truth. And then Lori didn't talk about Tylee the rest of the visit.
I would have been like, where's Tylee? Where is yeah, she? Why isn't she coming?
If you saw this person every day, right? I'm sure you were around the kids quite often. I don't know about you, but like any of my friends that have kids, I form a bond with those kids. And if they move far away, I'm going to go, hey, I want to hang out with the kids.
Right. Yeah.
And the way that Melanie comes across is that she's so loving and, you know, how she says later that she's not hateful or anything like that. I feel like if she's so loving, too, she would have wanted that connection with the kids, too. That's just my guess. Maybe she doesn't really care for kids. I don't know. So anyways, JJ was present during this visit. Now, when they did their weird walk around the track, Alex watched him. And I don't that's just like a weird connection to me. Alex watching a child. I don't know why.
I just think that because he's accused of doing so many heinous things that it's really hard to place him as any sort of caretaking personality.
That's probably it. Yeah, I just don't see him hanging with kids. But when Melanie arrived, Lori mentioned that JJ had turned into a zombie the day before. She pointed out behaviors and was like trying to convince almost Melanie that he was different. Lori pretty much created doubt with Melanie. And Melanie said his behavior seemed kind of the same as he had before, like as she had witnessed it back in Arizona.
But the way that Melanie discusses this, okay, this was my first like, what the feezy, Melanie Gibb, because she handled it so gingerly, right, in the interview, but you could tell that she like believed it. Like she was like, I don't know, JJ, he seems normal to me. Any sane person would have been like, I'm calling CPS.
Well, this is where I started getting upset with her, is because she knows very well last time they said Charles was a zombie and look what happened to Charles, right? And let's say had they not said that he was a zombie, let's just say that that same situation that they painted had occurred, but no one thought of him as a zombie. I don't know if Alex would have shot him, you know, like Alex may not have. Maybe he would have showed restraint. I don't know. So once they labeled it a zombie, that's a threat. That's something we need to get rid of. So her labeling her own son as a zombie means that same thing. This is a threat. We need to get rid of the zombie. So as her BFF, she should have been like, all right, well, kids aren't zombies. You know, we need to save this kid. And again, it's hard to put yourself in someone else's shoes in a weird, creepy, crazy situation. But every time I try to place myself in her shoes or, you know, put it in my own life, like if my friend or my best friend did something like that, I feel like I probably would have been crazy and taken the kid.
But see, here's the thing, is that Melanie didn't because she buys into it. She exactly. bought into it. So I feel like that was the first moment where Melanie let the veil slip of how much she actually bought into Chad's quote unquote truth and beliefs. Because any right. normal human being would have put 1 + 1 and 2 + 2 and A + B together and been like, oh, crap, JJ is in grave danger.
Exactly. And that's what makes me so sad is that she just stayed for this weekend and left. And I feel like I would have never left. I would have guarded the kid. And now this is another scary part, right? This is if I'm right, and this is she never mentions the dates. I wish he would have asked what dates did this occur on. But I feel like this falls in line with the babysitter story. So I pulled again the babysitter notes about what they had witnessed, and I pulled it this time from Fox 13. They have a whole document of the nanny statement. The babysitter arrived, and she said, I walked inside. She mentioned she was waiting for her brother to come and leave with her to the airport. She says they were going to Idaho Falls Airport, which is the closest airport. Now, when Lori returned, remember, JJ was throwing kind of like a tantrum, which sounds like it was kind of normal, unfortunately, for everyone, honestly. Take that. That's mean. sounds like that occurred occasionally, so understandable. But she says shortly after his freak out, his mom, her brother, and their friend walked in from the garage. She described the interaction between Lori and JJ, and she said, like, Lori calmed him down and babied him. And honestly, if this was after she thought he was a zombie, I feel like she was still caring for him, you know, like she would her own kid, yeah. if it's a zombie kid. But then she says she introduced her friend with me and that she podcasts of some sort, or she does podcasts of some sort. I didn't see a suitcase, so I didn't think she was staying long.
Bam.
Mm-hmm. And that's a Thursday. So Thursday, September 19th mm-hmm. is that statement. So let's say Melanie Gibb got there September 19th, right? And she left the morning of the 23rd, September 23rd. What happened on September 23rd?
That's the date that JJ disappeared.
That's the last day he was seen at school, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. If that's his last day at school, so what was Melanie Gibb's real reason for visiting that weekend? I've seen some reports that there was some sort of conference or speaking thing that she had attended, but it just seems like everything kind of falls in line. Not saying that she has anything to do with, you know, the kid's disappearance, but yeah, like you're saying, maybe she was bought in. Maybe she knows more.
I believe, I 100% believe, taking this as a whole, right, including parts 2 and 3, I do believe that that Melanie knew exactly what happened to JJ. I fully do, and I believe that she was bought in. She has the behavior of someone who's just starting the process of being deprogrammed, you know, from like a cult right. of beliefs. So, and I think here in a moment we're going to get to that, but I fully believe that she was aware of a plan that was in play.
That's what makes me so sad, that she can come up and... I honestly think she knows more. And I saw it a couple times where she kind of stops talking. And not, again, we don't know if maybe she can't tell us because lawyers or
she
whatever.
I don't
know.
Central to this entire investigation. Melanie Gibb is mm-hmm. probably the most important witness in this entire case spanning multiple states. So I'm sure there's some stuff she can't discuss.
Right. But that's just a very convenient weekend to be there. Yeah. And then JJ's last whereabouts was September 23rd. So I'm wondering if maybe they dropped him at school, took her to the airport. I don't know the time events. This is speculation, but took her to the airport. And then when they picked him up from school, they did whatever.
Hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That's, yeah, that hurts my heart so much. So they talk about zombies. All right, so this is where they kind of get into the zombie specifics, I should mm-hmm. say. So Charles was the first zombie Melanie heard about. Chad had called Lori to tell her Charles was no longer Charles. Melanie was actually with her when she received this call. He was now Ned Snyder. And before, in a lot of the documents, I thought it was Nick Schneider.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now it sounded, you know, I don't see her typing it out, but it sounds like she says Ned Snyder mm-hmm. in this. So I don't know who's right or which possession zombie demon thing was happening, but it's Ned or Nick.
Yeah.
Now, Melanie said Lori was blown out by it and was uncomfortable. And Melanie thought the whole thing was just unusual.
Just so weird. Just lightly weird.
Yeah. And I'm like, just unusual. This is where I don't fully agree that she wasn't completely brainwashed, because the average person would call their BS and be like, well, that's nonsense.
And we can't forget, though, right? And I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but don't forget that Melanie and Lori were inseparable. They were almost inseparable at different times. They mm-hmm. would be together almost daily. Lori and Melanie did podcasting together. These weren't just two random women who became quasi friends. They were best friends.
Right.
So she bought in. Melanie Gibb bought into all of this.
She had to have, because she keeps going, I thought it was unusual. Oh, I thought that was strange. Mm-hmm. I thought this. And I'm like, no. If you thought that, you could have stopped some of this. So you were bought in. And you know what? I shouldn't say it's okay. I understand how that could happen to someone. Mm-hmm. And I understand that now she's making better choices. But also you were bought in. You let some of this happen. So yeah. You can't just go, they're bad people. Like,
oh, she doesn't even do that, Amanda. She doesn't even do
I know. Well, she says that they've made poor choices and poor decisions, but she also was making these poor choices and decisions.
Yeah, right along beside them.
And that's where I'm like walking a line, because I am thankful that she did this. I understand how hard it probably was to get out of all of this craziness. And like, I commend her for that. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, you know, I don't know. I don't want to bully her, but it's just, you were part of this and I don't know. I don't know how I want to come across on mm-hmm. that. But she said Chad could see things. At least he portrayed that he did. When you think, and this is kind of a quote that she had brought up, she said, when you think someone could see things or have visionary experiences about things, you tend to kind of believe them more than the average person.
Nope, nope, nope.
And he would say his veil was open all the time. And then she said, but I have come to understand that the gift has been manipulated by the adversary. And then Nate said, by Satan? And she said, absolutely. So, like, I understand that she sees, you know, and it's hard. If you're inside something happening, you don't know. You know, your decisions could be different. But then when you look at it from the outside, you're like, I would have done this, 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 this. So, again, I see it and I need to back off on her a little mm-hmm. bit. But it just makes me so frustrated.
Yeah, me too.
What was happening with Charles? So Charles, again, was no longer Charles. And it was an unclean spirit of a friend of Charles, it sounded like he was friends with this person before. And now they had passed on, and now the unclean spirit was on Earth roaming around, and he attached himself to Charles, and now he entered his body and took over. What?
This is the first I've heard that Ned Snyder was an actual living, breathing person, supposedly.
Right, and I don't know if they mean, like, maybe on another, you know how they talk about other lives, other planets, and all of that? Like, maybe they knew each other back then?
Oh, they're talking about on this Earth.
But if it was on this Earth, who is this Ned or Nick or whoever he is, and, like, is there a record of Charles knowing this person?
If you or any of your friends know, please email us at wesawthedevil@gmail.com. Because Melanie was like, unclean spirit.
Right. And like, does that mean that they turned dark after they died? Or like, were they dark all around and they just like stalked Charles? I don't get it. So I tried to look a little bit about, you know, Nick or Ned, whether it be Schneider or Snyder. I don't see any people that I feel like Charles could have come in contact with, mm-hmm. but obviously I didn't do some crazy like background check on everyone Charles has talked to.
Yeah.
So no idea where that came from. And how would Chad know about one of Charles's friends unless it was like a close friend that Lori would have brought up before, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So no idea how he got this info. But Lori said that he would sit in his portal and receive revelation about people.
Sit in his box.
Yeah, so I want to know where this portal is, and I want to know how the hell we close it. Because this needs to stop. Someone needs to talk to Chad about closing that thing.
Yeah.
It is up to no good. So the word zombie wasn't used at first, but then it kind of grew into the word zombie.
So as everyone knows, Melanie was present during Lori's psychological and mental evaluation. They received Lori, she passed with flying colors, and she got out very quickly. So Melanie waited outside and then Tylee picked both of them up. The purse incident where Charles took Lori's purse was shortly after this.
Right. And I thought that was before the evaluation. Like, you know, when we were watching those videos of Lori at the police station, that was after the purse was already gone and they were talking about the evaluation.
Yeah.
So I was a little lost on that. Right?
I was a little bit lost, too. The timeline just didn't match up to what we've seen so far.
Right, because I want to say that's where they gave her the information on where to go, but I'll have to review that video again. I've watched it a while back.
So Melanie touched, and this was interesting to me too. So Melanie touched on Lori always having never-ending drama in her life. She was like, Lori, why is everyone into your life turning into zombies, and why is everyone after you? And Lori replied that Satan really hates her, and because of her exaltation. So, like, the level she was exalted to, right? She said that the adversary and his whoever are coming straight after her. And Nate replied and said, so anyone who disagreed with her or caused her any sort of problem would become a zombie? And Melanie replied, pretty much, or considered to be dark. They're a little bit different, but that's another discussion.
Right, and I like the way that Nate just fired back at some of these. Like, isn't it obvious?
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, Lori knew how many zombies were in every state.
Yeah.
Chad would give her a number, mm-hmm. and he would receive revelation on how many. And their goal was to get rid of the zombies before tribulations came upon us.
So is that going to be like natural born killers, just Lori and Chad ride off into each state into the sunset to try to kill all of them? Like, I don't understand.
I don't. Yeah, I thought of like a weird TV show, like zombie killers.
God,
I don't know. So they would get rid of the zombies through some sort of prayer that they would do. They believed it was effective because they would go back and check the portal and see how many died. And all I kept thinking was, what kind of evil queen magic mirror BS is this?
We're saying that they allegedly killed the children. There's still no evidence of this, right? Like,
right.
But
right.
Why couldn't Ty Lee and JJ have received prayer?
Well, I guess this prayer killed them, though, right? The way that she discussed it is this prayer would kill the zombies. They'd go back, talk to their magic portal, and their portal would say, yep, you killed 10,000 of them, or, you know, however many of them. God. They literally both laughed at this. Like, it is so laughable now. Mm-hmm. But again, why, if this is so laughable, why didn't you call authorities then?
Right.
And especially if your friend is claiming that this weird magic prayer is killing people, or claiming that it's killing people, or I guess zombies in this case. Like,
I'd also love to know the justification behind, because wouldn't you think, right, say Chad picked New York. I killed 10,000 zombies in New York today. Like, mm-hmm. don't you think that they would recognize that that would probably make actual news if people were dying at that rate?
I mean, maybe they thought it was, you know, all the car accidents that happened in New York on a particular day. Those were all the zombies that died.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I don't know what they thought their prayer did. And remember, they thought that Tammy was going to die in a weird car accident. They thought Charles was going to die in another way. Yeah. Like, just that there were so many different deaths, and maybe it was due to their magic prayer.
Maybe.
Like, maybe they were, I don't know.
I'm sure that Chad had some sort of reasoning behind that to try to prove his case.
But imagine talking to your best friend and she's like, yep, we said a prayer and so many people died in whatever state our portal told us. Again, she was bought in. As much as she says that she questioned it, no, I don't believe that at
Agreed.
All. So Lori received revelation that Charles was supposed to die in an accident on his way home from Texas. Clearly, he didn't. When Melanie asked why he didn't die, in another part, who asks that? Who asks, hey, you said he was going to die. Why didn't he die? Again, you were bought in. She didn't seem to know, so she asked Chad. And Chad said the accident that was supposed to happen didn't happen because of people's choices. And then Melanie was talking about how when things didn't go according to plan, it was because of agency and it would change. And it's because people change their agency. Is that the dark and light? Like, people are making poor choices and becoming dark?
Yeah. I mean, if Chad had visions, right? People mm-hmm. have agency. You and I have agency. People have their own agency. So
right.
wouldn't it make sense that you can't predict every single thing that a person is going to do because of their agency? So it just seems to me like Chad knew what he was spouting was bullshit and then just kind of tried to cut, like a cat in a litter box, just tried to cover it up by saying this.
Right. Well, I don't know. Someone must have changed it. And I just didn't see that it changed. Like, okay, well, he lived, so I guess just let him live. Get the divorce. Yep. But Melanie claimed that Lori called Alex and asked him to stay before Charles's murder, which made me go, hey, Summer, why are you lying?
Hey, Summer, we'd like to talk to you.
Yeah, Summer. So Melanie says again, Lori called Alex. Summer had claimed she had called Alex and was worried about Lori. Mm-hmm. So which one of them is lying? I tend to believe Melanie more than Summer. Mm-hmm. Now, Melanie didn't even know that Charles died for 4 days. So some friendship there.
Yeah.
You know, how they were together for so much and then all of a sudden it stopped. I wonder why during this time they weren't so close. What actually was happening?
Well, I do believe, isn't this roughly the time too that Melanie was going through a divorce? So I feel
I don't know.
Melanie was going through a divorce. So I feel like this is roughly the time that Melanie was going through the divorce. And then the stuff with Chad was amping up as well. So they just weren't seeing each other as much lately.
Couldn't they have just been divorce buddies and both gotten divorces?
Right. Go to Vegas like everybody else does.
I just don't understand if, yeah, this friendship all of a sudden was just, oh, no, it's fine. But she called her 4 days later and asked, hey, did you see the news? And she's like, no, what happened? And then Lori gave her, pretty much she recalls the same story she gave police. Mm-hmm. And Lori had mentioned Charles was coming over from Texas to kill her. Yeah. So I don't even understand what was happening here, really. And I don't know if we'll ever really know.
Yeah, I don't think we will. But she said something that they were after her for insurance. So Lori claims that she had $3 million on her head and Charles had $1 million. And she did, in fact, talk to Melanie Gibb about Charles having life insurance and wasn't happy about Kay getting it. So Melanie did, in fact, confirm that Lori was aware and was pissed that Kay Woodcock was getting it. Oh, and by the way.
Oh, yeah. And Kay's a zombie, too.
Yeah, magically Kay's a zombie. Isn't that convenient?
Convenient, yeah, exactly. And we'll say why that's so weird later on, too, because if Kay's also a zombie, then something else happens with that. Yeah. So Melanie also mentioned that she believes, and she wasn't 100% sure on all of this, but Tylee receives money from her father's death. And she also believed that Lori received money for JJ, too. And then I don't understand where Nate got this, but Nate mentioned something about how Lori gets like $6,000 a month tax-free.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
So I don't know what records he had access to see this, but she got a decent amount a month.
This is something that I thought of is the cost of living, right? If she had the children and all was well, $6,000 a month adjusted for even cost of living in Rexburg, Idaho, would give you a pretty good lifestyle. Home, yep. Land. I mean, you could have virtually almost, you know, a super nice house and virtually anything that you wanted. So if it was just solely money based, which obviously it's not, I mean, that the two children were bringing in a lot of money.
Right. That's so sad.
It's so like, sad.
It's sad to think about it that way. Melanie questioned the zombie thing, and she talks about how she talked to Alex about it. And Alex said he 100% believed it. He really thought Charles was a zombie and he was protecting his sister. Now, Nate at this point circles back to JJ being a zombie. Like, well, didn't she say, JJ's a zombie? And at this moment, I feel like what he was actually asking is, why didn't you stop this?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was his intention, but that's how I perceived it
as well.
Okay. And especially because she had just seen what happened to Charles, who they claimed was a zombie. Melanie said she didn't think Lori would have done it. Like, she didn't 100% believe it, and that she didn't think she would actually do something to JJ.
So Melanie says that Lori trusted Chad's revelations because she wasn't considered a visionary. This was apparently only for Chad. And he, as we all know, would deem people as dark, light, or zombies. And she, Melanie, believes that Chad told Lori that JJ was a zombie. So Melanie Gibb squarely put the blame on Chad for telling Lori that JJ was a zombie.
Right. And she didn't think she would do anything to him because that was her boy.
Mm-hmm. And Lori did, however, though, and this gave me, like, honest to God chills when I heard her say this.
Mm-hmm.
Lori told Melanie something like, JJ is in the way of our mission, so we need to send him to Kay's house. And I was like, oh.
Before she finished that sentence, before she said, and we need to send him, I was like, oh no, where did they need to send him? And then she said Kay's house. Like, but it hurt my soul a little bit to just listen to that. Your kids aren't in the way of anything.
Lori wasn't actually sure if Kay would receive him and take him in.
Which, obviously, she would have.
And Lori even told one of her neighbors that he was going to Kay's, too. So,
I think maybe the neighbor that had the little boy that they would play with, I'm guessing. And then, again, this is where I got super upset with Melanie. I know, again, it's hard if you were put into some sort of creepy, weird, tricky situation. But I feel like the majority of people would always do the right thing to protect a child. Maybe not an adult, you know? I don't know maybe if it's a mom thing or what, but I feel like I would do anything to protect someone else's child.
Putting myself in Melanie's shoes, I'm sure JJ was difficult to deal with, right? Like, you know, as a lot of people have come forward, even though searching for the children have said that JJ was a handful. He was also unmedicated, most likely, right? Like, she didn't refill his prescription. So I'm sure that made it even harder. By the way, JJ's a zombie. We're going to send him up to K's. And I feel like Melanie, this is the piece where I don't know if I believe. Because at what point wasn't Lori saying that Kay was evil and Kay was coming after her too?
Right.
So this piece does not make sense. And I feel like my antenna went off when she said this. And I'm like, Melanie, this is bullshit. Because up until this point, Lori had been saying that Kay was coming after her.
Right. Well, yeah. That and then also, remember before, she said, yeah, Kay is a zombie. So my thought was, okay, maybe she's just lumping the zombies together and they can live their zombie lives until they say this magic prayer that kills them. But then ultimately the goal when Lori's doing these prayers with Chad is to kill the zombies.
Right.
So her deeming her child a zombie meant she wanted to kill her kid. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how she didn't.
And same at Kay. And same with Kay. So
yeah,
it's just I'm calling Melanie being dishonest at the with this particular piece.
Agreed. Agreed. Or she lied before saying that their goal was to kill zombies. Which I don't think that was a lie.
No, right. I don't think so either. And then Melanie did, in fact, leave Rexburg. She claims that she believed that JJ was going to Kay's house and that Tylee was in college. Obviously, we think the piece about JJ is a lie, but I also do not believe that she thought that Tylee was in college.
No, and she even says it sounded like a lie. And if you sound, I don't know, if you guys are such good friends, I know I can question my best friend and be like, I don't believe you. What's really happening?
But they're in the same group. Like, at this point, Melanie's already, you know, admitted that she was fully bought in on Chad. So wouldn't Lori have entrusted her best friend with all of this information?
I think so. And that's why I say I think Melanie does know more than she told us. And it could just be lawyers are telling her not to. I don't know. But some of these stories just don't add up properly.
Or Lori could have at least had the shred of intellect to know that being like, hey, I'm killing JJ and we've already killed Tylee is probably not something you should tell another person. Maybe she didn't fully trust Melanie.
But she pretty much did say she was going to kill him by calling him a zombie.
Yeah, but true. But she said, oh, I'm just going to send him to Kay's house. So maybe Melanie is gullible. She's naive. She seems like a very sweet woman, but maybe, I don't know. It could go so many different ways here, but regardless, Melanie knows more.
Mm-mm. Well, I mean, even before this, though, she talked about the prayer that killed zombies all across, you know, different states. Were they just skipping Kay's state?
Right.
No, they weren't. So, yeah, their intention was to kill. She knew that. Yeah. And that's why I'm kind of frustrated with now she gets to be on this other side outside looking in. And it's like, no, you led up to this, too. And it's, again, I'm not blaming her for a child dying. She did not kill the child. I don't believe she did.
No, but she could be entirely complicit with it.
Right. And that very much frustrates me. Because I just don't. I don't know how you get brainwashed where it's okay to kill a child. Yeah. But she expressed that shortly after she left that JJ had indeed gone to Kay's. And Lori told her some fantastic story about meeting up in an airport and, you know, Kay taking JJ. And then she got the chilling call from Chad 2 days before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And she got very emotional talking about it. And she said Chad called and said, when the police call, don't pick up the phone.
Yeah. And she said that she was just so confused. Her heart dropped. Chad told her that the police were at Lori's house checking on JJ. She replied, JJ is not with Kay. And Chad said no. And Melanie claims that moment, for some reason, is when she knew that something was wrong, but she didn't understand. And Nate kind of, you know, inquired a little bit more into this. And she said, you believe your friends are good people. I just couldn't believe that they would do something like that.
Right. And when she's saying something like that, she knows he's dead.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's my interpretation of it. Again, we don't know. There's no proof that he is dead. I'm hoping all of this is weird and crazy and wrong and that he's just hidden away. But my hope is pretty much diminished after these.
It's gone. I have no hope at this point. She said that Chad was nervous, sounded very nervous. She said he was almost shaky, and then he sounded scared. She said that Chad just did not sound himself. And he also mentioned that Lori was going to tell the cops that JJ was with her. And she was like, what? Oh, yeah. Melanie was in Utah at the time with her new boyfriend.
Right. And then she said, then she's talking about Chad, but then she says she said. So I'm wondering if she meant this was lumped into the call with Lori, possibly. But she said something about how Kay was wanting to kidnap JJ based off of emails from Kay. And when she was like, I haven't read your emails. I don't know what you're saying. And Kay had mentioned in one of them, I guess, that I'm not going to kidnap JJ or anything. And she didn't see that as a threat because that's not a threat. That's saying that she's not planning on doing anything threatening.
So why then did Lori tell her best friend that JJ was with Kay?
Exactly. So makes no sense. So she found out this information later, right? Mm-hmm. That Kay was supposedly threatening. But she did find out earlier that Kay was a zombie.
Yep.
So all of this just seems very weird. And I feel like there's a big missing piece.
Mm-hmm.
So shortly after this, she talks about how Lori then called her. And Lori was positive and upbeat. Nothing bad was happening
at all.
Nothing
was wrong at all.
She said everything was fine. She was protecting JJ from the people that were after him. Later, too, Melanie does say when she did finally talk to police, she said she had a bad gut feeling.
Yeah, Melanie says that she wanted, now, finally, she has a bad gut feeling. And that she really did actually want to believe Lori. And Lori asked Melanie to tell the police that JJ was with her and would be going to Thanksgiving in Arizona with her. Melanie says that Lori made it sound like they arranged
it. Yeah, like they prior arranged it.
And that Lori would come down to Arizona to pick JJ up. And Melanie ended up talking to Alex. And this was very telling to me. So Melanie talked to Alex and Alex said, quote, I can't believe she threw you under the bus like that.
Yeah. And was that, you know, an act on his part? Like, oh, I don't know anything about anything. That's crazy. Yeah. Or do you think that he knew more?
I honestly don't know. I feel in my gut and in my bones, I feel like Alex was obviously involved in both children's. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I feel like Alex was involved in their deaths.
I do, too. But then the way that this sounds is like he was distancing himself from that situation. So I don't know. Yeah, like maybe he did do it. And then he was like, all right, I'm done. I'm washing my hands of this. I'm done with it. I don't know. Yeah. But it just seemed very strange the way his reaction. Or maybe he knew that like Melanie was possibly, you know, going to turn and start talking. And he wanted to just make himself look good.
Yep.
So Lori had told Melanie that she had told the police that Melanie and JJ had gone to Frozen 2. And this is the weird, sad, horrible thing. She asked her to take out her cell phone. Like, I don't know if she meant like go to the movie theater and take out your cell phone. But she said, take a random picture of random kids running around and make it look like you have him with you.
That is so beyond just. Ugh.
Yeah. And Melanie luckily declined to lie on this. And she almost like looked just speechless right there where she was trying to talk about it. Like you could tell it hurt to talk about.
Yeah.
At one point, Lori told Melanie that she was taking a trip with Chad's children to California, too. When did they go to California?
That's a good question. Apparently, it was right before Chad and Lori left for Hawaii.
Yeah. But I just wish I could understand that interaction, too.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie says that she had spoken with police that day, and the focus of their investigation turned back on Lori and Rexburg, which rightly so. Lori told Melanie that JJ was in danger and that Kay and the others were going to kidnap him. And for Melanie's safety, Lori couldn't say where he was. So the weird thing about this part is we don't hear her talk about this.
Uh-huh.
It was like a black screen with letters that popped up and then it was gone. And then it was like back to normal discussion time.
That was really odd. Does anyone have any idea why this would happen? Because I've never seen it before in any interview.
No, I'm wondering if maybe she just that's all that she could say and like just to make sure that she didn't give any more detail.
I don't know.
So I don't know that. But OK, Lori was protecting Melanie from some weird thing, I guess. Melanie confided in a friend and they discussed all their doctrines, zombies, and how they didn't fit in the pattern that the scriptures teach.
And she said that darkness is always done in secretive, and that's how Chad operated. Everything was so hush-hush.
Yeah, the way that she described that, though, I feel like that was the biggest thing out of this interview to think about. Like, that's kind of a good way to think about things. If you can't say it out loud or you can't talk about it openly, it's probably not the best thing to be doing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and she kind of expressed more of that. You don't have to be on the run and hiding when you're transparent and making right choices. If you're telling the truth, you have nothing to worry about.
And she said that there are many people other than Chad that believe these teachings of many lives and multiple probations within the church or just closely affiliated groups. Nate actually asked about that. She says, does having this information make you a better person? Does it make you loyal to your spouse? Does it make you better than other people? If the idea of multiple probations hadn't been introduced into this group, no one would have ever died because they would have never thought that they were married before, right? So don't forget, Chad's like, you and I have been married in all these other lives and right. We're meant to be together. Our spouses must die so that we can be together again. And that is so dangerous.
Right. It is. And it's sad for like some just like weird twisted love story. I don't know. So Melanie told police everything, luckily. And this was all back in December. So she wanted to make that a point that she said all of this back in December, because I guess people might be thinking that she's reading the news and reading all these other things that are coming out. And that's where she's getting it from. But she claims, nope, this happened in December before all of that was released. And imagine being that police officer, just like taking that, like, what?
Well, Melanie says that the police officer was like, we've heard all of this. We've heard, you know, nothing you're going to say is going to surprise us. And I'm like, OK.
Oh, no. You know, he went home and he was like,
this crazy bitch.
What is happening? But she did. I mean, I did commend her for this. She admitted to being gullible and she said it was embarrassing to talk about it. And I'm sure that's so hard, because if you put yourself in her shoes, like, imagine having to tell the story now because you also made bad choices and you're having to admit that. Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine. I mean, putting myself in her shoes, I cannot imagine what it was like for her to sit down knowing that this is going to be seen internationally.
Yes, yes. And she hopes that this will help Chad and Lori come clean. She said it's going to be hard for Lori because she has to admit the people are dead because of these teachings. And it'll be hard to admit that she had something to do with the death of her family.
Yeah, those are pretty hard line.
Horrible.
Yeah. And that's pretty specific wording, too, on her part.
Mm-hmm. She knows. I just feel it. Like, she knows that the kids have died. And I'm wondering if maybe she did already talk about it, you know, like maybe she's already told police and that's why they're still, you know, searching wherever she said for the bodies or what. But then, like, is she gonna get in trouble for some of this too?
I don't know. That remains to be seen. I'm assuming that she probably, if she's fully cooperating with police, I'm gonna go ahead and assume that she'll be granted immunity.
Interesting.
All right. Well, that sums it up for part two of Melanie Gibbs' interview with Nate Eaton of East Idaho News.
All right. There's a lot. And then we will go over our part three thoughts as well. We've already heard it, luckily, but we will tell you our thoughts tomorrow.
Yes. And again, if you haven't, check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com. You can check us out on Facebook at WeSawTheDevil, Twitter at WeSawTheDevil, and Instagram at WeSawTheDevilPodcast. And check out our Patreon to see if there's a tier that's just right for you.
Mm-hmm. I would love to send you a postcard.
Yes, she would. She loves handwriting them.
I actually do. It's kind of fun. Yeah.
So that's it, guys. Again, thanks so much for listening. Until next crime.